Here it comes, the latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. This show is sponsored by Discount Cab, and I want to do a shout out of gratitude to them for all their support this year and for helping to make this show possible. They are really big supporters of the Mrs. Green's World mission and vision, and everyone on our team appreciates it, and it's nice to take a little bit of a pause and say thank you. And did I mention they are very green? So I love that. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. The title of our show today is Wildlife: Rescue, Rehab, Release. My in-studio guest is Dan Moxley from the Tucson Wildlife Center, and this is an amazing story. Just get ready for an amazing story about amazing place, hashtag amazing, and so reflective of a community coming up, stepping up to support injured wildlife in our community. Dan, welcome. And boy, do I have a lot of questions.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here.
You can tell I'm really excited. And I told you off air, it's like, this is really, truly a great community story. So you can tell it. I'm not going to do all the talking.
Okay.
It's really, tell me how it got started. And I was shocked to know that you've been in existence for 16 years.
Yes, in 1998, our founders, Lisa Bates and Pete Leininger, decided that they wanted to start something because there was so little for wildlife that got injured or orphaned. And at that time, they were working, you know, out of their home. And these are really two of the most incredible people, the most passionate, amazing people I've ever met. And they started with just a few animals a year, and it has grown. And this year, in April, we opened Arizona's first state-of-the-art wildlife hospital. And there are not a lot of those in the country.
I took a tour online. I mean, if I'm looking, I'm saying, you've got to be kidding me. It's gorgeous.
It's very nice. It's our architect, Ben Cole, is on our board of directors. And it's really terrific. A huge upgrade from what we were working with before.
So people, literally two people, you know, when you talk about the ability of a small group of committed individuals changing the world,
right.
Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. This is the epitome of that story. So they started it. The word spread. If you have an injured animal, take it to them.
Right.
I assume that's how it started.
Yeah.
And then it grew and grew and grew.
Exactly. And with the help of a lot of volunteers as well.
A lot of volunteers.
Yes.
And I'm going to try to do some of this sequentially because it is such a great story to tell. But what about, it's free. Like if you find an injured animal, you take it there and everything that's done from the rescue and the rehab and the release is free.
Exactly. It's a free service to the community. It's offered 24/7 every day of the year. In the middle of the night, sometimes we have to, you know, go out and pick up a coyote that's been hit by a car. And, you know, we've done a lot of that.
A lot of that. I bet you have those middle of the night calls. And when those people, are those people that are on staff or is it staff and volunteers that respond to the
middle of the night?
Generally,
that's staff.
That's good. That's really good. Like, yeah, there's the Volunteer of the Year Award.
Right.
We need to have that to be able to keep it going. So most recently, there's a couple of stories I would like you to share with us. So it started with them and then literally, even still to this day, a lot of your support comes from private donors, community support, correct?
Yeah, almost all of it, actually.
Almost all of it. I mean, it's unreal to me, especially since you built the hospital, too. Now, I love to give a shout out to one of our great partners, TEP. And they really, I mean, Sharon Foltz is like,
fantastic.
She's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs about this, as
right.
I say, and so am I. When she first told me, I'm like, she goes, you have never been out there? Well, I'm going to change that. So talk about the Eagle Flight Line. Is that what they did for the eagles and other large raptors?
Yes, it's called the Tucson Electric Power Eagle Flight Line. And so, you know, when we have a bird that has a broken wing, for example, you know, or really any injury, we need to give them the opportunity to practice flying again so that we know that they're releasable and that they'll survive in the wild once we've let them go. And last year, Tucson Electric Power came out, and a team of their crew came out and helped us build this new flight enclosure, which is the biggest one we have now. It's for larger birds like eagles.
Right, right.
And they put in power poles 8 feet in the ground and strong cables that hold up the netting. And it was just a fantastic collaboration, really, between
the community. It is, and they step up. I mean, I did go to a presentation on their Raptor program, and all of the information they have available on their website about if you, for hawks especially, in building the nest in power poles, and they really care about our wildlife, and they show it.
They really do.
Their community volunteers, from the employees that work there, their financial support, I mean, they step up big time. But Dan, how many, do you get a lot of eagles from in this area, or is it more hawks?
Many more hawks.
That's because we see hawks.
We did have an eagle, a golden eagle, was released in northern Arizona with two others. That was in February of last year. But as you say, it's mostly hawks, different kinds of hawks.
They're everywhere here.
Yeah.
And they come out and they bathe in our...
And owls, I should say, as well.
Owls. Okay, so I want to ask this also. How do people know to find you? I think I'm a really community-connected person and activist, and I heard about you maybe 4 to 5 years ago. How do people know to call the Tucson Wildlife Center if an owl is injured? Is it fish and game? Is it law enforcement? Who's calling you?
Both.
At 3 a.m.
Well, not that many at 3 a.m., fortunately. But
that's good.
But Arizona Game and Fish often refers calls to us, and the police department, various, the county. And if you do a search online, you know, a Google search, you know, for Tucson Wildlife Rehabilitation, generally with the first name that comes up, and you can go to our website, or you can always call 290-WILD. 9453.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I know, wild. Let's say that a couple of times. So what about your involvement? Since you've been there, I want to ask you this. Like, I always want to know, like, what was one of the strangest animals that ever showed up? It's strange in that, I mean, you've got to be kidding me. And I know you haven't gotten any polar bears. But what kind of animals are surprising? Because you're like, what are you doing here?
Oh, well, the most recent one was our white pelican. I would say
a white pelican in Tucson, Arizona. So talk about that. They turned left when everybody else turned right. What happened?
Actually, this one was a little different. It was found in Lakeside Park at the lake there. It had fishing hooks caught in its wing and some fishing line tangled up in its wing. And so the other white pelicans that it was with had moved on without it. And so we brought it to the center, and getting the fishing hooks out was not the problem. That was the easy part. The tricky part was finding other white pelicans to release it with afterward.
I was going to say, where does it go from there?
Right. They fare a lot better when they are together, you know, rather than trying to release one all by itself. So we reached out to the community. We looked for various bodies of water, lakes, where we could, where there might be other white pelicans where we could, you know, join them up together. And each time we heard of such a place where there were white pelicans, by the time we were ready to transport our white pelican,
they were gone.
They were gone. They'd already migrated on. So, but then we got a call from Prescott Audubon Society, and they had two up there at a lake there. And so a couple of our volunteers packed up our pelican in the back of a truck and took them up there. And
they got there in time?
They got there in time, and the three of them stayed there for another week to 2 weeks. And the Audubon people up there were watching every day and reporting back to us. And it was a great story. It worked out perfectly.
And I'll tell you, the Audubon people, they're dedicated. Well, some of the ones that I've met, I was up at the Grand Canyon once, and I had one of the most fabulous wildlife experiences of my life, but there were lots of Audubon people laying on the ground watching the migratory pattern of hawks. And I don't even remember what it was, to be honest. And I was like, and they could tell it was a, you know, ruby-throated, spotted, whatever. And they were dedicated. They were laying there for hours counting, being part of that.
That's remarkable.
It is. Yeah. It really is. But the white pelican story, story. Oh my gosh, that is really pretty amazing. And you have a network that that blows me away too, that you can activate so more people are watching to try and help you.
Yes, exactly. And that was a lot of fun. That release was really exciting.
So what is does the board get excited? Do you share stories with the board? I mean, you've got a really wonderful active board that helps mm-hmm. and is a hands-on board. Do you send the stories, update them, or do they come and visit? I mean, if I was board member, I'd love to know that story.
Oh, yeah, of course. And we let them know of everything going on, naturally. But we also, we've got a quarterly newsletter that goes out. And of course, our Facebook page tells some of those stories, too.
The Facebook page is fun, and somebody puts videos up there. I don't know if it's you, but it's great to watch short little videos on the Facebook page. And that is Tucson Wildlife Center is the name of your Facebook page. I love to do a shout out for that. So what was 2014 like? Were you busy? Did you have lots of injured animals? It's a terrible question to ask, but it's like, thank God you're there.
No, it was actually probably the busiest year ever. I mean, we opened our first, as I mentioned, our wildlife hospital in April. And we've had about a 30% increase in the number of animals we've taken in this year.
And what are the most kind of animals? Is it like bunny rabbits? Is it coyotes? What do you see the most of?
It varies depending on time of year, but it's also, I would say it's a real mix.
Did you ever get a bear?
The larger animals like bears, deer, and mountain lions, we actually don't rehabilitate those. Arizona Game and Fish has the resources to work with those.
Bigger jobs, so to speak.
Yes. but pretty much anything else. We had a lot of bobcat babies came in. They were orphaned. Actually, one case, there were three orphaned bobcat kittens that... it appeared that a larger cat, like a mountain lion, had killed their mother, and they were left alone. And so we were called.
And how did they find you? I have to know. I have to follow the...
An internet search.
Yes. Someone found them and knew.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And so we took care of those. We have a bobcat who lives on the property, Ruby, and she's a permanent resident.
I've got to meet Ruby.
Yeah, she takes care of the babies when they come in. She's a foster mom.
Oh, my gosh. You got to be kidding.
It
just keeps getting better. So baby bobcats and teeny tiny, do people get bunnies? Like all of us that have ever had the unfortunate experience of hitting an animal that jumps out. Yeah. It's like, so people stop and bring them to you also?
Yes, oftentimes they do. And, you know, of course they don't all make it, but oftentimes they do. Probably, I would say about of those animals that are treatable, meaning those that
you can save.
Of those, we usually are able to release about 80%.
That's a really high number. And tell me about when you you get the animal, you rescue it. It may or may not need surgery, like broken wing. Is it an operation or is it just healing? I don't know about broken wings and birds. Do they have to operate on, or does it depend on the severity?
It very much depends on the severity.
Okay.
There are a lot of treatments that can be done. But we have volunteer veterinarians who come in when we need them, which is fantastic, for procedures that are more complicated, like surgeries.
Right. Yeah. And then do they know, what I'm curious about as the consumer is... the release part, that has to be, so you get three bobcats. How do you know where to put them back? You know what I mean? It's like there's got to be a story for each opportunity that comes through your door.
There are some landowners throughout Southern Arizona, ranchers and other landowners who allow us to release animals on their land, and which is fantastic because, you know, they are wild animals and we try to get them back out into the wild.
And is there an assessment team that says, okay, this one's ready?
Our animal care staff, yeah.
They know.
They know. And we don't want to keep them too long, and we don't want to keep them too short a time. And yeah, they're pretty good with knowing exactly the right moment.
So tell us a little bit more about the staff. I don't want to gloss over some important details. Because you'd have to have, do you have staff that know what this animal eats versus what this animal eats and what this animal eats? I mean, it's such a complex system since you're not treating little dogs. You know what I mean? Like there's such a diversity of animals that come in.
It's a wide variety of animals and birds, and our animal care staff and many of our volunteers have a tremendous amount of knowledge about all of these animals, and they recognize them and they come in and they know what to do. And
you can Google it. I mean, that sounds funny, but there's a lot of information. I know it's not that simple. I don't want to minimize what they're doing, but there is internet availability, but then you have to get the food, right?
Yes.
Yes. It's not just knowing what to feed them. It's like, where do you get it?
Yeah. Sometimes we have to buy it. Oftentimes it's donated by local grocery stores. Some of the produce that they're not going to use, for example, they'll give to us. And, you know, we can feed that to the javelinas and some of the other animals.
I didn't even think of that. Javelinas. My brother had a picture on his Facebook page the other day, only in Tucson, right? People have javelinas on their front porch. He had 8 of them. And it's kind of scary. They were not afraid at all of humans, which is the whole encroachment issue, but it was pretty exciting if javelinas come up on your porch.
Yeah. Yeah, we love them. They're actually the favorite animal of our founder, Lisa.
Okay. Yeah, they're. I just think they're so cool. You should see people like out at Miraval when I was out there visiting. People from out of state said, oh my God, I saw this thing and it looks kind of like a wild pig, and on and on and on. They are exciting to people that are from out of state. They're like, what is this?
Right. And you should see the babies. Oh my God.
They're so cute, right?
Yeah.
They're so cute. They really are. Okay. What do you do besides treat the animals? I understand with my minimal amount of knowledge, actually. Do you do education programs and tours? If people are listening, can they find all this out on your website?
We do. Yeah, we have education programs. We go to schools and other various groups in town, and we'll often take an animal, like a great horned owl, for example, and talk about what we do and the animals and the wildlife in this region of the country. And you can also take tours, pre-scheduled tours, usually.
I was going to say pre-scheduled. Please don't just drop in. Yes, we're busy. We're really busy.
And I have been known to give a tour to drop-ins, but it's usually pre-scheduled. Usually Wednesdays and Saturdays.
We're not saying that on the air. He will not do drop-ins. Please call ahead and we'll give you the number.
There you go.
Really, it's great. But I understand it's your passion too when people come by. And I can tell you that we'll have a Mrs. Green field trip.
That'd be great.
It really would be great. And we can do some Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. That's my favorite. Now talk about One Wild Night.
Who
wouldn't want to go to something called One Wild Night? That's coming up
January 17th.
In about a month.
Yeah, about 6 weeks. Yes, that's our annual fundraising event. As you know, we're supported entirely by a donation. So we have an annual event, and we've got silent auctions, live auctions, we'll have music, a short film, and it should be a whole lot of fun.
Is there dancing?
We're probably not going to be doing dancing on this one.
I like that.
good.
I like that. One Wild Night, it's like, that's fun. That's really fun. So you get great silent auction items. Do you have any that you're really excited about yet or not telling? Get your tickets.
We've got quite a few, and more still coming in. The community has really been fantastic in donating all kinds of different things. So
it's a lot of work, too. Do you have a committee for that?
We do, yes, a fantastic committee.
Because I'm telling you, I've put on enough events in my life, so you have to know that it's really a lot of work, a lot of moving parts.
Oh, yeah.
And how many people is this? What number is this for One Wild Night? That whoever thought that up was really clever.
That was the committee. I'll have to let them
like know. Let them know. Mrs. Green likes that. Okay. Hashtag One Wild Night. I think in hashtags these days. It's pathetic.
I'm sorry, you were asking how many people there would be?
How many people usually come?
Well, let's see. We had about just over 200 last year, and we were shooting for about 300 this year.
And that's great. With all the events there are in Tucson, that's really super to be able to get that. And the tickets are $175.
Right.
And you can get them online. You can order online.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I want to tell everybody, because I checked, it is Tucson. I wrote it down. Where did I write it down? Tucson Wildlife Center. No, TucsonWildlife.com.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's not .org. It's .com. Okay. For people that are listening, what are some of the best ways that they can support you? There's always donations. Money is good. It helps keep the doors open, helps employ people.
Of course.
Helps the services. What other opportunities are there? Are there great volunteer opportunities?
There are. We've got about 70 volunteers that we try to keep year-round that really run the place for us and make it possible for us to do what we do. And we ask for a six-month commitment because there's a lot of training involved.
I was going to ask you about that training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we have to, you know, be... There are safety issues, of course, we have to, you know, and but it's a lot of fun. The volunteers prepare food for the animals and oftentimes go on rescues, especially during baby season. Have I talked about baby season yet?
It obviously ignites your passion and makes me so excited. So that's mostly in the spring?
May, June, July, into August.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, at that point, we're inundated with baby animals and people bring in a lot of, just everything you can imagine, baby rabbits, skunks, ground squirrels, baby birds of all kinds, all kinds of things. And I should
mention, do you even get like hummingbirds? Did you ever get a hummingbird?
Oh, yeah. We've had a few this year.
Oh, my gosh. That'd be really
You
fantastic.
Should see the hummingbird nest. It's so tiny.
It's like a
And the baby birds are even tinier.
Oh, my gosh. That's great. Is that one of the most joyous parts of your job?
It is a lot of fun.
Seeing the babies come in.
Yeah.
Okay. So volunteering. And is it cyclical? I'm just curious because some of our listeners might be inspired. So if someone's listening, do you have volunteer training ongoing? Is it monthly or do you have times of the year when you do your volunteer training and then they do a 6-month commitment? Or how does the volunteer training work? Because that's really critical.
It is. It depends on need. Right now we have a full volunteer staff. And so we're okay right now. But it's also the slowest time. We'll really need to gear up for summer because a lot of the volunteers go out of town and some of them are students and so they also leave town. So that's a good time to, March, February, March to start thinking about it if that's something that would interest you.
Right. So there's volunteering, there's donations, mm-hmm. and tell the number again.
The phone number?
Yes, for people who might hear it.
520-290-WILD, which is 9453.
It's lucky that you guys got that.
I know.
It's really lucky you got that. And let's go back a little bit to the hospital. Give us a look inside the hospital. I mean, it's amazing to me. Again, I want to reiterate, this is through community support that it got built.
Yeah,
and volunteers and...
Absolutely. And I should tell you a little bit about the main benefactor of that hospital was Sam Goldman. It's actually called the Sam Goldman Wildlife Hospital.
Please do.
He was, he lived in Florence, Arizona, and he wanted his estate to go to a wildlife facility, but at the time of his passing, the facility that he had named was already gone. It no longer existed. So his executors traveled around to 5 different states looking at places like ours. And they chose us for the bequest.
Oh, that was a happy day.
It was. And that took care of...
Were you there when you got that news?
I was not there at that time.
But
no.
It was a happy day.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was... That covered 2/3 of the cost. And the rest came from right here in the community.
It's really great when you have a big donor like that to get things started. And then people get inspired to make it happen.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, before the hospital, we were... You know, we had adequate facilities, but they were much, much smaller and difficult with the larger number of animals that have been coming in. So, but to your question, so when you walk in, first you see our little entryway, and straight through there, you've got on your left, you have triage and treatment.
Oh my gosh.
And there are windows in the hallway, so you can actually see what's going on there.
Right, right.
And I should mention, too, it's eventually intended to be a teaching hospital. So we're on track to become that because we want more
for wildlife.
Veterinarians to know. Yeah, specifically.
For wildlife. Mm-hmm. That's what's so, to me, cutting edge about it. It's not like a big or small animal vet hospital. It's wildlife.
Exactly. And so, and then right past that, we've got our x-ray and we have a surgery room. Across the hall, we've got our education room. And
the UMC for animals
is pretty much there. ICU rooms for mammals and ICU room for birds, a food prep area. It's pretty cool.
State of the art. And for all of our listeners in Arizona, in Pima County, we've got to put it on our bucket list. I'm not kidding right. Because I think it'd be great. And also the best times to come. I'm going to come out once, but then I want to come out when there's babies out there.
Oh yeah.
My kingdom for a baby bobcat sighting. Oh my gosh, seriously, not that I want their mothers to be abandoned. It's one of those, like, be careful what you're saying.
Oh, right, I know.
You don't really want any animals in there, but thank God that you are. So I want to ask you back, and I don't know if we fully discussed this because there was a lot of content. People are still hearing about you. So they're doing searches on the internet. Is there a pretty good intact network among, like, fish and game and law enforcement? I would think they'd be involved because people would call the police if they found an animal. I mean,
yes.
If I did, I would call 911 and say, what should I do?
Yes, and that network is growing. We have been getting animals from Davis-Monthan, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. Occasionally, like a family of owls will take up residence in one of the hangars or something like that.
And,
you know, a baby owl will fall out of the nest and land on the ground, and they'll bring it to us.
So they know about you. That's great. It's a big area out there, to have you connected. It's wonderful. What is the, I know this is going to sound really weird, but I have to ask you. Do you ever get sad that you, like, it's so attached? I would think about, like, in foster care, like, you say, oh, my God, I know we have to let him go, but we really don't want to. Ruby.
Yeah. We've got about a dozen animals that live there permanently. All the rest, we, you know, our whole purpose is to get them back out into the wild. But it is, it's hard not to fall in love with some of them. But, you know, that's our whole purpose, is to get them back out of the wild. And so we minimize human contact. We even, when animals are babies, we actually wear masks so that we don't look like humans. We've got a cat mask,
for
example.
Are you kidding?
No.
I haven't seen that on your Facebook page. That's awesome.
Well, you know, small animals can be imprinted. And what that means is that if they have too much contact, you know, with a human being when they're babies, they can start to identify with a human rather than with their own species. And after that, they generally are not going to be able to make it in the wild. So we really avoid imprinting. Considering the number of
animals. It is, like I said, it's complex. It's not just like fixing a dog or a cat or adopting. There's so many more parts to integrate into what you do. I got so excited preparing for this interview. It's like, we're finally having the Tucson Wildlife Center on Mrs. Green's World, Down to Earth. Okay, your website again, I want to do that and make sure people know it's TucsonWildlife.com. Your Facebook page is Tucson Wildlife Center. Is there anything else you feel like we needed to cover that we didn't? The brochures you brought me are great. I'll be passing them out to the team. The event is January 17th, and people that are listening can get tickets online. And which I guess I want to ask you, like, what's next? You have the hospital and you have the flight line. What's next?
Actually, the hospital was phase one of a larger project. So we'll also, in the next couple of years, we're planning to build onto it a little bit. We'll have a smaller two-story building. The ground floor will be administrative offices, which are much needed. And the top floor will be residences for veterinarians and interns who can actually live on the property and learn.
So it's not an exaggeration on my part, which I'm so prone to exaggerate. It is really going to be a state-of-the-art place for people who visit Tucson. I mean, it already is. To me, it's incredibly unique in what it offers already.
It really is.
But it's going to be just the story about the donor and their executors doing five-state search and picking you. It's something we should really be proud of.
We're very proud of it.
Really, really proud of it.
Yeah.
And the work you do. And I can't wait. We're going to have to really, shame on me if we don't get it back. So everybody, this was a great interview. Dan Moxley from the Tucson Wildlife Center. Visit it at TucsonWildlife.com. If you're out there and want to support them, they can use volunteers. Donations are always good. I can tell you that. It's a great thing. And I want to remind everybody, next week, my show on December 13th, this Saturday, is a woman named Danielle Nierenberg. She's the president of Food Tank, the food think tank. And it is going to be a great show. This woman started a food tank think tank about food scarcity and food waste. And it's grown from 9,000 Facebook followers to 223,000 in a year.
Wow.
And I met her when she was at 9,000, so I can't wait to have her back. Everybody, you know you can connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, you name it. Mrs. Green's World is out there spreading the good green word. Join us on Saturday at noon, Mountain Standard Time. Thank you so much, Dan, and make it a great green day, everybody.
Thank you.